In today's episode, we're going to talk about if you can take estrogen in perimenopause. I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackie from Progress Your Health. So today we have a question from Jackie, and she has some concerns about starting estrogen, but there's a little twist to this one that I don't think she really quite understands. So why don't you read the question from Jackie?
Which is probably why she's asking the question.
Yeah.
So no, this is a good one. Here it is. So I am concerned that if I use estrogen cream such as estriol, that I will gain weight and lose hair. I have seen conflicting accounts to whether this is true. And some say that it helps to regrow hair and helps with weight loss. I have not started menopause yet. I'm almost 40, and I want something to help me stay youthful, lose weight, grow my hair, which has started thinning very badly and continues since pregnancy, help protect bone density, improve mood and memory, and get my libido back. Is estrogen cream a good thing for me? Thank you.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, she's asking all the right questions, sort of. The concerns about, you know, weight gain, hair loss, those are obviously perimenopausal, menopausal symptoms. But there's a big clue there in her question that sort of kind of gives us an answer. It's not whether she can take it or not, or it's not whether she's going to have any side effects, the hair loss or the weight loss or not. There's something very specific in the question.
And what's that clue?
Well, she says she's almost 40, so technically she's 39, wondering if she wants to be able to use estrogen or not. Estrogen as a systemic treatment, she's not really a candidate for that quite yet, because we are assuming, based on just age alone, that she still is having a period.
And, you know, and what she's talking about here is very true, because there is so much, conflicting evidence, conflicting opinions out there about whether you can take estrogen in perimenopause, whether you can take it in menopause, you know, different side effects, how to take it. In fact, I was, I love to do a little bit of Google searching, and now with AI actually has some generated answers saying that you can take estrogen when you're in perimenopause. And really, that is not a full, I wouldn't say that's not true, but I'm really hesitant in women that are in perimenopause to give them estrogen therapy because of the side effects, because of the risks. I mean, I love bioidentical hormones. I love hormone replacement. I think it's amazing. It can do so many things to help with so many symptoms and quality of life and longevity. But at the same time, you want to be really careful giving a woman that's already making estrogen more estrogen on top of that.
Yeah. So the standard answer, the quick, 2 second, this is less than a 3 minute video answer, is that she's not a candidate for estrogen. Because of her age, because by giving her estrogen, she's just going to throw off her cycle. She's going to probably have more bleeding, heavier bleeding. She's technically just not a candidate. However, she mentions estriol cream in her question. Mm-hmm. So that's one caveat where you could say she is potentially a candidate, because you mentioned on a couple of podcasts ago that you've been using estriol yourself since what? You're in your early or mid 30s?
Well, I've been using estriol topically on the face, yeah, since probably my mid to late 30s, and I'm 51 now. And I do think just for targeting the skin on the face, it is really good for helping to build collagen, helping with fine lines and wrinkles. And so I do feel in that respect, but that's where it also comes down to dosing too. You have a certain dose, so you know that it doesn't go into the bloodstream to affect systemically. So I do have some women on a little bit of estriol, kind of more systemically, trying to work on that when being in perimenopause, but we always look at the blood levels and checking the blood levels. I would say, estriol is so much more gentle that could be a component that Jackie could use, or another female mm-hmm. that's in perimenopause, but certainly estradiol. So estradiol is E2. That's the strongest form of estrogen that we make in our bodies. Is giving Jackie or somebody like Jackie some estradiol, I think she would probably gain weight, because estrogen can, if you're having too much estrogen in your system, Jackie obviously is, she's young, she's 39, she's just got over pregnancy, so she was cycling, that she is making estrogen. You put more estradiol on that, she could gain weight, because that causes a lot of water weight, can make you moody, that can throw off a lot of skin issues, even some sleep issues. So I would say for Jackie doing the estradiol, that would probably be a no.
Yeah. I think it would probably, honestly, I probably don't think it would. I mean, she might feel great for a while. And I think we just talked about this on the last episode or a couple episodes ago, that I would eventually catch up with her, and her cycle would just sort of dictate that she just can't maintain it.
Yeah, the estradiol loves to thicken the endometrial lining of the uterus. So over time, if Jackie's taking estradiol, and I would hope, she would be taking progesterone. So I'm going to go back to that because progesterone would be, she would be a great candidate for progesterone. Yeah. But the estradiol would cause some thickening of that endometrial lining. If she's got fibroids, probably exacerbate her fibroids, and she'd have some probably cramping, some irregular bleeding, some spotting, heavy periods. Over time, that would probably happen with her. But I would definitely say in terms of perimenopause, you know, that's where the progesterone really comes in.
Yeah. And we talked about this, I believe now it was, I don't remember the number, it was when we talked about fibroids and, early menopause or premature ovarian insufficiency. Mm-hmm. The woman on that episode, I believe she was also like in her late 30s. We are sort of talking to something similar. She went on a little estrogen, she felt great, right? In this context, I just don't, like you and I would not prescribe biased necessarily for a woman in this situation.
Or estradiol, yeah. Biased is a combination of estriol with estradiol. I would say probably, you know, number one would be, okay, she's 39. Let's check her hormones. Let's see, you know, where her estrogen levels are, where that follicle stimulating hormone is, where that luteinizing hormone is, even, you know, checking her progesterone and checking some of the other hormones too, because this is something that we get a lot of questions about. And I understand there's so much information about hormones and how amazing it could be, but here she is saying, you know, I want to take something that's going to make me stay youthful, lose weight, you know, help my hair, help my bones, help my libido. You know, that's a lot to ask from one thing.
Sounds like a panacea that doesn't really, hormones are amazing, but they don't necessarily just fix all those things when you start taking them.
Be awesome if, you know, you could take one thing or put on a little bit of some estrogen cream and all of a sudden all that is better. You know, it really is when we work with a client or a patient, it's about taking the whole view in, not just the estrogen and progesterone or where they are in perimenopause or menopause. Also, we look at the thyroid hormones. We look at the adrenal hormones. We look at those androgens like the testosterone and the DHEA, the pregnenolone. So kind of pulling all of that together and coming up with a treatment plan that might not just be one thing, but it might be a collection of few things, plus some supplementation, plus some lifestyle changes that we could do on here. So I wish the estriol would, you know, like you said, be the panacea for Jackie here, but it probably wouldn't.
She's probably, if she's almost 40, so she's 39 as of this question, which we received in the early part of July. So she's not quite 40 yet. She's got probably another good 10 years before she's a true estrogen candidate. As menopause, you know, usually occurs in the, you know, 50 to 51 range. Now you mentioned a few things there. So thyroid, progesterone for sure. She's definitely gonna be a candidate for progesterone. It may have an impact on some of those things she's looking for. You know, maybe her hair, it should not cause any weight gain. Although those hormones, because they are steroid hormones, all the, you know, sex hormones are steroid hormones. They can cause some water retention. So it's something to, you know, consider, but usually with progesterone, it's, 95% of the time, it's usually pretty well tolerated.
Yeah, I would say I have a few patients I can think of in the last 20 years that couldn't tolerate progesterone because of the water weight or the weight gain or even the puffiness. But that usually your body gets over that, or you have to adjust depending on the person.
Yeah.
So I would say for Jackie, progesterone can be amazing for hair. It's like the unsung hero for hair. So adding in some progesterone may be helpful for her hair, because she's saying after pregnancy, she's lost a lot of hair, which is really common after pregnancy, postpartum. But usually then the baby hairs come in and things seem to balance out once they may not be nursing or that prolactin has gone down. Because right after pregnancy, that prolactin goes up to help with lactation. But if the prolactin's up, when you do someone's blood work that's, you know, that has high prolactin right after having a baby, which is natural, is you'll see the FSH and LH, which are the signals from the brain monitoring the overall health of the ovaries, are perfect. They're like at a 5, 2.5, 4.5. The LH and FSH are perfect. It's showing that that ovarian health is good, but you'll see the estrogen and progesterone are non-existent because that prolactin keeps that, because that's nature's way of trying to prevent ovulation, so you don't have a baby right after another baby. Which has happened before. So that's why a lot of times they'll have a lot of that hair loss. But then once they start to get their cycles back, depending on the woman, some females I've had them get their cycles after pregnancy in a couple of months, and other women 18 months, you know, a couple of years. So it all depends on the person. But once those hormones start to come back up, the hair does start to grow in. So I'm thinking with Jackie, maybe since her pregnancy, maybe her hormones haven't come up, maybe the progesterone hasn't come up, or she might be making more androgens like the testosterone and the DHEA that could be creating more of like an androgen-derived hair thinning or hair loss.
Yeah, sure. No, when you're pregnant, you got to realize too that a woman's estrogen progesterone when you're pregnant is, the numbers are just off the chart.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just literally off the chart. I mean, what does it go up to, like, you know, progesterone is like 4,000, estrogens, you know, in the 4,000 range, where on a normal cycle, you might see a woman's estradiol level, you know, at maybe a couple of hundred, maybe 200 or 300, and you have the baby and those hormones basically just disappear. So you have, you go from having for 9 months this tremendous amount of hormone to no hormone whatsoever, not to mention the stress of a newborn. So of course, like I said, a little bit of extra shedding and the thinning part, you know, I don't know if shedding and thinning is sort of the, if she means that as being the same thing. But I know we talked about the last, one of the last episodes as well, like the volume of the hair starts to change. So, you know, maybe she's, you know, maybe she is experiencing some of those perimenopausal symptoms, but, you know, technically, she's not really a candidate for estrogen quite yet.
I don't think she would feel very good if we, if she took a bias, that combination of the estradiol and the estriol, or just a straight estradiol. I think she would feel really bad on that. I think she'd feel really good with the progesterone. Checking those adrenal hormones would be a great idea. Like she was saying about, you know, getting the libido back. You know, estrogen is an amazing hormone, but you know, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. You have too much estrogen in the system, and she's like a runaway train. She will just knock everybody down. So in some ways, having that progesterone around helps buffer the estrogen. It also helps buffer the androgens. So I would say she would be a great candidate for doing the progesterone, but it's interesting. There's so much information. Like I was just playing around with Google a little bit about, you know, giving perimenopausal women estradiol.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So for you, all you ladies out there that are listening, you do have to be a little careful and, you know, kind of check and double check your sources and see where the information is coming from. Because from our standpoint, a woman that's 39 years old is not a candidate. Now we talked about, so something she could be a candidate for potentially, you said progesterone, possibly estriol as a, either as a face kind of moisturizer, anti-wrinkle cream. That usually should not be a problem. Possibly vaginally, if she's having any, you know, pain with intercourse or something like that. Depending on how recently she had the baby, that might not be appropriate quite yet. So some localized estriol could be, could potentially be possible. Mm-hmm. But even still, if she's applying it vaginally, that still could cause some issues if she's cycling on her own.
And then maybe, you know, pregnancy is, like when you think about actually pregnancy, it's so amazing. Like what happens, what this female's body goes through, it's incredible. So, you know, pregnancy can cause interesting things to happen to the thyroid. Cause I work, we both work with a lot of thyroid patients, and I'll say, you know, when they get pregnant, the thyroid could stay the same after pregnancy. It could go really high. It could go really low. Hashimoto's could crop up. Your Hashimoto's can go away. I've seen Hashimoto's go away after pregnancy. Yep. It's, yeah, it's amazing what, you know, pregnancy can do for the body.
It literally goes in any direction.
It's like a gremlin, just whatever it wants to do.
Yeah. And you can't really, you can't predict some of those things. It just happens. You know, there's no real, you know, for some reason, pregnancy, the body does a really good job of protecting a woman while she's pregnant, mm-hmm. right? Not a lot of things happen during pregnancy, you know, besides maybe some, you know, typical
anemia,
you know,
complications.
But for the most part, and it would make sense from a survival standpoint that your body would do the right thing by protecting you. But once the baby's, you know, you've given birth and the baby's out, anything can happen from an immune system perspective at that point.
So I would say for Jackie, especially all the patients that I have that, once they have the baby, I usually say wait about 6 to 8 weeks after the baby because the body has to heal, is check her thyroid. Some of that, you know, some of the things she's talking about here about wanting to lose weight and her hair is thinning pretty badly. A lot of times I've seen when that thyroid tanks down, that causes a lot of thinning and a lot of shedding that it really wasn't postpartum. It was just that thyroid decided it wanted to, you know, go on vacation.
Yeah, right. Now, she mentions libido, of course, that for everyone that always conjures up testosterone. In this case, she could be a candidate for testosterone, but because of the hair thinning, she'd probably want to be a little careful with that.
Yeah, because testosterone can exacerbate hair thinning. I mean, I have some women that take tons of testosterone and they have so much hair, it's unbelievable. And then other women, you give them a little bit of testosterone and they start shedding a lot like crazy, especially in the temples and the top. So that would be something to test, you know, test her hormones, see where her testosterone level is at, and then decide how, you know, how you want to work with that. I would say for her, definitely building a base of progesterone first, yep. and then doing kind of the accoutrements, or like, as I call it, the frosting on the cake, you know, yeah, build right. that base first.
Yeah, yeah. Testosterone, we always like to be very conservative, start very low, establishing what you call sort of a, you know, your androgen tolerance, and then sort of gradually building up. So, you know, the things you have to pay attention to if you're using testosterone, you got to look for breakouts or blemishes in the short term. Hair growth shortly thereafter, if you continue. So on the chin, where else? Upper lip, or maybe around the areola, abdomen below the belly button. And if you kept going, then you might actually experience some hair loss, which usually it never gets to that point because everyone's concerned about the yeah, previous two.
So you just kind of keep a balance on it, or just keep your checks and balances yeah, on
so
that.
Then the dose can kind of gradually go increase. You might not notice too much of an impact on a lower dose, but then as it goes up over time, you know, but every woman, some women can tolerate hardly none or actually none because their skin just flares up right away. And some, like you said, can handle quite a bit on the testosterone side. So every woman's just a little different.
So that might be something, you know, considering for Jackie, just because I think of testosterone more of as an adrenal hormone. For you as a male, testosterone is a reproductive hormone because right. you have the doohickeys and the gadgets to produce that, you know. Whereas females, we make a little bit from our ovaries, but we make the majority of our testosterone from the conversion of DHEA, which is produced in the adrenals that travels in the peripheral tissues and converts to testosterone. So when you see somebody that might be under a lot of stress, their DHEA, the adrenals are kind of diving, or with age, you'll see that testosterone level go down. So when I especially have a younger female, you know, in their 30s and their testosterone is super low, I'm either like, okay, what's going on? You know, are you not sleeping? Are you really stressed?
If she's got a newborn, her hair's thinning, her libido's low. So as stress level goes up, you know, all those things start to go down. Very often for, you know, especially for, you know, the busy moms that we see, we test their DHEA and testosterone, and both of those numbers, one or both of them will be low. Mm-hmm. Like you'll see a testosterone, I'll say less than 3. Like they have like literally none or at least it'll be in the single digits. It'll mm-hmm. be, you know, less than 10. And usually, what would you say an average for a, you know, healthy, hormonally balanced woman, you know, approaching her 40s, what would you say an average testosterone is?
An average testosterone probably be right around the mid-20s. I think the mid-20s. Yeah. Now, if you look at the reference ranges, if you get your blood drawn and you have your total testosterone taken and you're looking at the reference ranges on, you know, these labs, they'll have like Quest is 2 to 45 and LabCorp is like 7 to 55. It's just like, giant. Somebody can be at 7 and that's a normal testosterone, but they can also be at like 50 and that's normal. It's mm-hmm. such a wide expansion there that that does really kind of depend on the patient. So if I've had a patient that maybe they were more athletic, you know, more driven, maybe they seem like they had more testosterone when they were younger, they might be ones where if you had tested them in their early 20s, their testosterone ran around 40. And then there's other women where, like you said, you give them a little bit of testosterone, they instantly break out. Maybe their natural level is closer to like 18 to 23. Right. So it kind of depends on the person because the body is so smart. You don't want to bully the body. You know, you don't want to just hear, take all this, do what I'm, it will rebel at some point.
Sure.
So it's just about being gentle and guiding the body in the right direction that we want it to, so that we can look at long-term goals, like she's talking about bone density and that kind of thing. And then also looking at our short-term goals, which is, you know, having a libido, especially after having a baby.
Sure. This one's actually about estrogen and perimenopause, not testosterone and perimenopause, but she mentioned libido. Of course, that always comes up. It doesn't, if the stress level's high, testosterone's not going to usually fix that. Like you said, testosterone is sort of like the icing on the cake. When the other, you know, you have a good foundation. If it's a menopausal woman, certainly estrogen, progesterone first. Possibly testosterone later. Then build off of that. So, but the main question is she really a candidate for estrogen so it's kind of like yes and no, right? So systemically, she's not a candidate for estrogen, but locally, face and vaginal areas, if needed be, she potentially could be.
But for the estriol.
Just for the estriol,
E3.
Yeah.
You would never want to put with a female that has a uterus estradiol on the vaginal tissues, especially if she's perimenopausal. So I think the point about this podcast is, you know, there's so much information out there, especially for women. I mean, I'm 51, but I've worked with women for a long time. I know what it's like to feel tired and, you know, to feel like you're gaining weight so fast and it's so easy and not feel good. And then you go and look online and there's so much information saying that perimenopausal women are candidates for estradiol. And then just pointing to the estrogen, which I get, estrogen is amazing. It's what makes us female. but it might not be the one thing that, you know, somebody like Jackie or a perimenopausal female needs. You know, maybe that is the last thing she needs. We need to work on some other things.
Well, it's not that it's the last thing that she needs, but she just might not be able to tolerate it from a bleeding perspective, because eventually that probably would. Now, in a case like this, this is the thing too. She's talking about taking estrogen cream. She hasn't mentioned anything about progesterone. So in this context, the number one rule of hormone replacement, and that we never break, is you cannot take estrogen therapy without progesterone, right? We're going to do another episode in a short bit talking about why progesterone and the type of progesterone, why that's necessary. She cannot just take estrogen cream or some form of estrogen without balancing it with the progesterone.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely go into that because there's, you know, sure, if somebody doesn't have a uterus, you know, old school theory is, oh, you can give them progesterone, it's fine because they don't have a uterus. But I feel like even my menopausal females that have hysterectomies, they don't have a uterus, we still want to balance, you know, because progesterone's important. It's not just for the uterus. There's so many things. It's great for sleep. It's great for mood. Like I said, it's kind of the unsung hero for hair. There's so many things that progesterone is good for, but I guess maybe to really make it complicated, I do think doing some blood work and checking levels is important.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely. I would say
we do blood work all the time. Yeah.
Symptoms and blood work, I think getting, or some kind of objective data to say, where are your levels of progesterone? Where are your levels of estrogen? Because, for Jackie or any other perimenopausal female, when you check their follicle stimulating hormone, that which is checking if they are going into menopause, they might, still be at like a 10 or a 12, it's still, then you would say, that is not a person that's a candidate for estrogen, like when their FSH would be closer to like 60, then you say, that person could be a candidate.
Right. So like I said, just be careful of what you're reading online. If you're in your, late 30s to your, even to your later 40s, you're technically not a candidate for estrogen therapy, regardless of what Google says, because we would, in a case like this, like, Jackie's situation, we would just say, sorry, you just can't. We just can't prescribe it yet. Some of the, like the episode we did previously about premature ovarian insufficiency, if it was truly that, which is a very rare problem.
Yeah, I think they call it now primary ovarian insufficiency.
Yeah. That doesn't happen very often. So just because you're having some of those perimenopausal, menopausal symptoms does not mean you're in any type of, POI, as they call it. Now if you were, then yes, you're potentially a candidate, but if you're having a consistent cycle every month, you're not, that's really the distinction. Having a regular cycle every month makes you sort of not a candidate.
Yeah. Cause if you add that estrogen to it, I remember you had a patient not that long ago that was technically, still cycling and then taking, I think, from another practitioner, some estrogen, and, that then the periods are all over the place. You're chronically spotting, it's all over the place.
So she was on, we did sort of like a one-off consult because she was seeing another practitioner, but was having a hard time because she was bleeding a lot. And she was, I believe she was 50 or 51, something like that.
No, she's in her 40s.
Okay. All right.
It was like 40, 48.
Okay, 48. Okay. I don't remember all the numbers, all the ages run together. So 48, and she was having like two periods a month. And we are talking about it and I'm trying to figure it out. And then I asked the question sort of, haphazardly, which should have been my first question. I just assumed some things that I, didn't even think to ask, but her period actually never stopped. Right. So she just went from having her normal period into rhythmic dosing from another doctor. And I'm like, wait a minute, your period never stopped. She goes, oh no, I just kept on going. I said, well, that means that you're not a candidate. You cannot be doing rhythmic dosing if your own period is still intact. And she was having literally like a period every 2 weeks, which is what will happen if you're using estrogen when you're producing your own, you'll just start bleeding more often. So lo and behold, of course, she stopped the rhythmic dosing. Now she felt good because of the estrogen, right? Because that's what makes a woman a woman. But she was just, the bleeding was just, sort of uncontrolled. It was almost all month long. She stopped using the estrogen cream and the bleeding went away. Because she was not a candidate for it, so someone started her. And I've seen that issue, especially with rhythmic dosing. They're in perimenopause, they're towards the end, but their cycle is still relatively consistent, and they were put on a rhythmic dosing. You can't really do that. It just can't be done. So now rhythmic dosing, we'll talk about that on another episode later. That You know, that's a totally different type of hormone dosing protocol that intentionally creates a period. So that's a little bit of an extreme example. But if you're already having your own period, it sort of complicates things, and it's just not really a viable option for most women. So. That stuff does happen. So just be careful. You know, if you're, like I said, in your 40s, you're probably not a candidate, no matter what anybody tells you.
Or if you have a question, just like, you know, the questions we do for the podcast is just go to our website, progressyourhealth.com. We have a little tab called Ask the Doctor and put in your question. And we always change everybody's name. So we called her Jackie, but I'm sure Jackie knows who she really is when she listens.
Or this is on YouTube, you're watching the video. For those of you that are on audio, I'm sorry, but if you're on YouTube and you're watching the video, down below in the comments, just if you feel comfortable, right, you know, you have your username on there, so you might not feel, there might not be as much privacy there. That's why we're giving people the access on the website to be able to ask those questions.
We love all the information. I know on those comments, you might not be able to put a whole diatribe, but we love it. The more, if you are taking some hormones, you have some questions, you have some blood work, put in all the detail, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, we're talking about real people. Somebody like Jackie, there's so many other Jackies out there. So when you get a lot more information, then we're actually talking about a real subject rather than, you know, like, oh, I have hot flashes, how do I get rid of them?
Yeah, right.
Like, if you're having hot flashes, you're probably having trouble sleeping, which is going to make you tired, which is going to make you gain weight, which is, you know, there's so many things when it comes to the human. It's not like one thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting too, to see the questions that people are asking, you know, because, it's just a way to have your finger on the pulse of how, you know, how, HRT in general, like where things are going, where the trends are going, what are women experiencing, where are their challenges? And that's really why we're here doing the podcast. So, if you have gotten some value, if we are able to answer a question for you, feel free to like and subscribe on the channel. We're trying to grow our audience as much as we can. Anything else to add about Jackie, or we can wrap this one up?
I think this was great. Thank
you. Okay, until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.